Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They called me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. This evening, we're returning to one of the strangest cases of assassination in U.S. history, which is saying a lot if you know anything about U.S. history. We talked about parts of this story in numerous previous episodes. Do check out our work on the assassination of JFK in 1963. Also check out Rob Reiner's excellent recent deep dive, Who Killed JFK? And then also look into some of our previous work in this and other shows on the death of JFK's brother, Robert Kennedy, just 5 years later in 1968.
Oh, yeah, there's a ton of previous work. We would send everybody over to listen to the RFK tapes, which is a show that came out June 5th, 2018, exactly 50 years after the assassination of RFK. It's really good. It's hosted by a guy named Zach Stewart Pontier and Bill Klaber, who then went on to host the MLK tapes that we made in 2022 about Martin Luther King's assassination, also in 1968. Right.
It was a heck of a year.
Oh, yeah. And just up top, guys, I wanted to mention this because I literally found out as I was doing research for this episode, the connective tissue between RFK's assassination and MLK's assassination is this attorney named William Pepper. Mm-hmm. He was a big part of the MLK. Well, he was interviewed for the RFK tapes, but he's a big part of the MLK tapes. And the host, Bill Klaber, spent a bunch of time with him in his home. And I just found out he passed away on April 7th.
Of this year. Yeah, this month.
Really sad. He's like an amazing human being that's done an incredible amount of work. And it's just really sad that he's passed.
And he has quite a record, Mr. Pepper, of activism, of investigation.
Yeah, and he represented Sirhan Sirhan. And he also represented James Earl Ray on behalf of the King family.
Yeah, it may surprise some of us, especially younger listeners. You might hear us say an assassination happened multiple in 1968. That was a long time ago, so it might baffle you to realize that the man who murdered RFK is alive today. The man who was convicted of first-degree murder in the case of Robert Kennedy is alive today. In fact, he almost got parole not too long ago, and his legal team has been attempting to get him paroled for decades as well. We had, in our episode on drugs as weapons, we had a conversation about Jimson Weed and Datura. Yeah, it prompted us
to return to a question that well over 35% of Americans have been asking for a very long time. Was RFK's assassin, Sirhan Sirhan, involved in a conspiracy? Here are the facts. First, I mean, I feel like maybe we're in an information bubble because the three of us know, or the four of us know who Sirhan Sirhan is. But do we think most people know, or is it just a name they might have heard?
I think it might largely be a name they might have heard simply because it's kind of remarkable as a name. You know, it immediately makes you sort of take notice with like, what's a double name? What's that about? And also, by the way, Jimson Weed, doesn't that sound like a nom de plume for like some sort of Southern fried like author or something? I really like that.
We like him as an old prospector.
There you go.
Wild West thing. His dog's name is Silver.
Oh, of course. Lion. Okay. Yeah. I think I wasn't on that episode, but I do love that. Sirhan Bishara Sirhan, man, literally first name, last name, same thing. That must have been intentional. Was born in Jerusalem. Mandatory. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Mandatory Palestine. It's very insistent upon itself. On March 19th, 1944. He was raised as a Palestinian Christian and was also born with Jordanian citizenship. He moved to the U.S. at the age of 12, to New York, and then eventually to California, where he attended Pasadena City College.
Yeah, it's kind of an American dream. Sirhan has, as of this point, not acquired U.S. citizenship and remains a citizen of the nation of Jordan. I love that you're pointing out religion because he was always a fervent Christian growing up. And like many people, he was on a search for spiritual meaning. So he evaluated several different Christian denominations as an adult. He attended Baptist services. He spent time as a Seventh-day Adventist. And eventually, he joined an esoteric organization called the Rosicrucians in 1966. Which will be familiar to longtime listeners.
For sure. The Order of the Rose Cross.
Yes, yeah. In his case, he joined the largest one, the Ancient Mystical Order of the Rose Cross. It describes itself as a fraternal order, a philosophical, apolitical order that is devoted to, quote, the study of the elusive mysteries of life and the universe. Nothing weird, nothing vague.
Well, folks might remember that from our conversations around the Georgia Guidestones and the potential identity of R.C. Christian, which that, a pseudonym R.C. Believed to be referring to Rose Cross and then was a member of that order as well, which has a lot of parallels to Freemason kind of ideology.
Yeah, this is... I'm glad you mentioned that as well, because Rosicrucianism is already bound up in multiple unrelated conspiracy theories. So for the many people who believe there's more to Sirhan Sirhan's story, whatever that might be, this association can feel like not quite a red flag, but maybe a rosy one.
Hey,
not worth it. I don't know.
Look at the world through Rosicrucian colored glasses, if you will.
However, Sirhan Sirhan is now not best known for being a member of a Rosicrucian order. He is unfortunately best known for the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy at the Ambassador Hotel on June 5th, 1968, the 1 year anniversary of the 1967 Arab-Israeli War.
And another name for that war is the Six-Day War. You can look that up if you'd like to. It's another one of those times in history where there was a lot of often hidden and sometimes overt anti-Israel sentiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of Islamophobia as well. A lot of bad blood is the best way to put it. This is also known as the Third Arab-Israeli War, and it's called Arab. Israeli, of course, is a specific state. It's called Arab because a coalition of Arab states were on the other side of the conflict, primarily Syria, Egypt, and Sirhan Sirhan's homeland of Jordan. So there's a lot of context that goes into this, and we'll later learn what Sirhan himself says about this and then later reneges upon a couple of times. Things are, on the day of his death, on June 5th, 1968, things are looking pretty great for Robert Kennedy. It's a very tense situation. You know, if you've ever lost a sibling, you don't just get over it. So the death of his brother and one of his closest friends is still very much haunting him. And like the rest of America, Robert Kennedy has very serious questions about the official investigation into the murder of JFK.
Well, as we learned with our previous look at JFK, his brother RFK that we're talking about today, is he owes his political career to his brother, right? Like, he was brought into the fold by JFK, essentially appointed, and, you know, America overall was not too happy about RFK getting appointed to where he was. Like, remember when he brought, when he was brought in as, I think, attorney general?
He was, yes, without, despite not having qualifications to be attorney general.
So you can imagine that they're not just brothers. They're like, in a way, business partners, very closely tied, right, in their political careers. So when JFK is assassinated, it's, let's say it was of high interest to his brother and business partner.
And just like his brother, Kennedy, Robert Kennedy is no fan of the company or the agency, the CIA. They do not get along.
And the FBI, right? Because of some of the implications that had been going on with monitoring activities by the FBI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are the days of a different kind of wiretapping than people labor under in this country in 2024. Robert Kennedy is running for president. He is the Democratic front runner. He's right now, he's in California. He has successfully done his bit to achieve, to get one step closer to being the Democratic candidate for the next presidential election. So he's at the Ambassador Hotel. The reason we're bringing up the CIA, FBI connections, they go deep. It's also interesting to note that he has a lot of unofficial bodyguards at this point, like several athletes who just believe in his cause, believe in his mission. And he has been on record saying to the FBI and CIA associates, like, stay away. You know what I mean? I don't need your involvement here. I am running a presidency for the people. So I want to meet the people.
But he has a former FBI agent rolling with him, right?
He does. He has a former FBI agent that we'll get to, or a former associate. We'll see. We'll see.
I think Bill Berry, yeah. Isn't it right? Am I wrong? I thought.
I'm thinking of Thane Caesar, who was a security guard who was in the area, but not working directly with RFK.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Bill Berry. There's an ex-FBI agent who was also rolling with him at the time. When he went into the area where he was shot.
Emphasis on ex FBI agent. What we're saying is that many of the people in the Ambassador Hotel at this time had interesting past all their own. Each could be an episode. Well, many of them could be their own episodes. We'll give you the official story. Sirhan, the court found Sirhan shot Robert Kennedy 4 times. With a .22 caliber pistol, leading to Kennedy's death 26 hours later, due primarily to injuries to the brainstem and to his head, his occipital lobe, and so on. Other victims were there. Other people got shot. There were 6 shooting victims all in all, including some journalists, a Democratic activist, a campaign volunteer. All of the other people except RFK survived, thankfully. And Sirhan is tackled immediately. He's brought to the ground. He's still firing wildly in the air.
By a retired football player, right?
Yeah. Yes. And Rafer Johnson, who is an Olympic athlete, a decathlon gold medalist. Yeah, those two guys were the security detail we were talking about.
Rosie Greer being the name of the LA Rams, I believe, former football player.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. No relation to the Rosicrucians that we know of.
Yeah, or is there?
Or I'm is
sorry,
there?
There's not.
This is definitely fine. An or is there episode.
It is.
Because when Sirhan is being taken down, he is alleged to have been yelling out things like, I can explain, and I did this for my country.
What a thing to say. Whilst mid-shooting spree. No, really. Just give me a chance to explain. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
Right. Yeah. Like someone's going to go, wait, let's hear him out.
Jesus.
So later he would note in a couple of different conversations, he would note that he felt betrayed by RFK's support of Israel. There's a specific moment he cites where he says, I decided RFK had to die 3 weeks ago before I came to the Ambassador Hotel because I was incensed by his that he was going to send military support to Israel, specifically jets.
Well, yeah, in his pocket, there was a newspaper clipping that specifically said, quote, the United States should without delay sell Israel the 50 Phantom jets she has so long been promised, which is a quote from Kennedy in that clipping. And I think it can also be noted that when Sirhan and Sirhan's home was raided, there was a notebook allegedly in there that had scribbling all over it. Quote, RFK must die. Like,
oof.
Like, and we'll get to that too.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's the stuff of like conspiracy movies, you know, where you see it like scrawled on the wall in blood or something, you know, it's, I mean.
Yeah. As we'll find later in this episode, it's definitely the stuff of premeditation.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? If he actually wrote it, put it there. Just putting that out there.
Yep. And before we get to all of that, let's go back to that specific day, the aftermath of the conspiracy. As we said, he's captured, he's tackled, he is disarmed at the scene. A few days later, he confesses to the murder to police in interrogation, but then he pleads not guilty. And there's this trial that goes on for quite some time. A judge, his legal team later asked the judge to allow him to change his plea to guilty after those papers are found in his home that have what you would call highly implicating language. You know what I mean? Kind of the way that a celebrity stalker might be found to have a bunch of writing in their home that for prosecution can function as evidence of escalation, right? Evidence of going from compulsive thoughts to action. And this is a thing that happens. The question is, you know, the question about the provenance of the handwriting, the origin of the writing, stuff like that, that has been an extreme focus for a lot of what we will call independent researchers, maybe. He did something, I don't know how to feel about this. According to witnesses and reporters during this lengthy trial, he behaved in an odd manner. And for more, I guess, cynical or skeptical observers, they were certain that he was acting this way on purpose, trying to put on a show to bolster his legal team's argument that he had diminished mental capacities at the time of the murders and even during the trial. And we kind of, I hate to say it, but we do see that kind of attempt at theater in court cases in the US. You know, somebody is filing for a personal injury and they make sure that they show up like kitted out, right? Even if they might not need all the cast or the neck braces, et cetera. And then what's that thing? Like a lot of celebrities, there was this halcyon era in the 90s and early 2000s. Whenever a controversial celebrity or musician went to court, they always, for some reason, had glasses on.
Yeah. Because it makes you like, what? A little more approachable seeming. Not sunglasses though, right? Like glasses.
No.
Yeah, that would be the opposite effect. If it was anyone wearing sunglasses inside, immediately sus. But no, if you're wearing glasses, it makes you, oh, you're a human being. Just, you know, you have flaws, right? Your eyes aren't perfect.
This guy couldn't have done that much cocaine. Oh, look at his glasses.
I almost did a spit take just now. Sorry.
Well, let's talk. His demeanor was described really strangely when he was there, like at the assassination. So trial is one thing you're talking about. I've seen that too. But when he was there at the scene, his calm demeanor was noted several times. Just how he acted and did a thing and then was calm. But they also described him as being, quote, not in complete control of his mind while at the scene.
Ooh.
Which, what does that mean?
Well, the calm aspect combined with that really makes me think of like someone's been activated, right? And then they're like, you know, kind of non-emotionally going through these preset instructions, right?
Yeah.
Right. The idea then that a series of commands had been enacted and afterwards you're just done. The program has run, right? That's the implication here. But there's even more to the story, which we'll get into. These are still just the facts. The jury was not convinced by this argument for diminished capacity. There are longstanding questions about whether defense dropped the ball in some way. And be that as it may, Sirhan was convicted on April 17th, 1969. He was sentenced to death in the gas chamber. 3 years later, this sentence, like all of the death sentences in California, is commuted to life in prison. And that's due to a Supreme Court ruling, People versus Anderson, which outlawed the death penalty in that state. So that was a blanket change. It's very important to note he was not singled out and getting his sentence commuted the way that George Bush did for those serial killers in Texas, or for that one serial killer. But there's another strange aspect to the story that we have to give you right before we get to the ad break. It's one that remained consistent for quite some time. For decades, Sirhan Sirhan has claimed he has little to no memory of the assassination at all.
Yeah. And the reason why we're talking about this is because we talked about that drug and like what it would do in the moment. You could lose your memory. So I say we dive into any of the possible conspiracy theories surrounding this thing and just go through each one.
Yeah, we'll get to it after a word from our sponsors.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Here's where it gets crazy. How does that old saying go? Every prison is full of innocent men, depending on who you ask. Sirhan's case is different because there is never really a question about whether he was in the room, whether he attacked RFK. We'll just say whether he attacked RFK. There's no question about that. Absolutely happened. Multiple witnesses, ballistics evidence. He had a gun. He fired the gun. He admitted that. And earlier he had written, or he appears to have written, a manifesto calling for Kennedy's death. It's chock full of vitriolic language condemning Kennedy. It is clear and inarguable that he did not particularly care for RFK. But again, the world is full of people who don't like each other, and most of them never become assassins, right? Most of them are just like, it's Greg.
Well, I think it creates a problem for anyone who comes after to look at this thing, because if you've got an individual who has a deep resentment of someone, then they could be used as a very helpful, we'll use the phrase that Rob Reiner used when we talked to him, patsy. That is the word that Lee Harvey Oswald used to describe himself in his situation. And if you've got somebody like Sirhan Sirhan who has a hatred or maybe even a psychological thing going on where he's writing down RFK must die in his notebook, if he has a gun and he's on premise, you know, for the place where, let's say, you're a group that's going to kill RFK, it would be a fall guy. It would be a pretty easy fall guy. But he did, according to multiple witnesses, he shot that gun. Sirhan Sirhan shot the gun that he had at RFK, hitting him. So it's I don't know.
But hitting is not necessarily, not every gunshot is fatal.
There you go. Right?
And we're going to learn some more specifics that are troubling. Okay. So an interrelated couple of theories here, double dragon kind of theory set, involves the idea of orchestrations by the CIA or CIA associates and a second gunman. Again, there's a lot in common with the allegations surrounding the JFK assassination just a few years prior. There was a 2018 interview with Washington Post. A lot of the sources we're going to be talking about are coming kind of recently because there is a cyclical media interest in the Sirhan case whenever he comes up for parole. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a somewhat controversial political figure today, talks to the Washington Post in 2018 and says, you know, I traveled out to California and I met Sirhan Sirhan, where he's incarcerated, and I talked with him for a long time. And I left believing what Sirhan told me, that he himself did not kill my father and that a second gunman was involved. And then RFK Jr.'s sister, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, herself a politician, would later say that her brother made a compelling case. She talked to him about his conversation with Sirhan, and they both called for the investigation to be reopened. They also were pretty, to their credit, take it as you will, RFK Jr. said, I don't think that my opinion will really change anything, but I, as his son, I think Sirhan should be out of prison, or we should at least look into this again.
Isn't it weird? Guys, isn't it weird that Martin Luther King Jr.'s son did the exact same thing, came forward, talked to his father's alleged assassin, was convinced by a bunch of research and witnesses and other evidence that was coming forward that this person wasn't the killer of his father, and tried to get him out of prison? Like, that happened. These are two assassinations that occurred in 1968, and they both have sons. Both men who were killed have sons that were convinced that the person who was in jail didn't kill their father.
Mm-hmm. And now that's not the same thing as conclusively proving innocence, but it is powerful.
It makes people take notice. You know, those are usually the people that are like, yes, justice has been done. You know, I feel vindicated, or my father's death has been vindicated, as opposed to the exact opposite, which certainly makes people take a little bit of pause, right?
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And we know that there has been extensive research into this because a lot of people, again, weren't satisfied with the legal proceedings nor the government's conclusions. One book I want to give a big shout out to is A Lie Too Big to Fail, which you can read for free on archive.org right now by an author named Lisa Pease, P-E-A-S-E. And this author argues that the real mastermind of the assassination was not Sirhan Sirhan, not a politically motivated lone wolf actor, but instead a CIA fixer named Robert Mayhew. We were talking about Mayhew a little bit off air. Have you guys heard about him? Dug into his story?
Mm-mm.
Have you seen Mission Impossible?
Of course. Allegedly, the new one on the plane recently, and it was quite good.
I don't know about the new one, but allegedly the Mission Impossible idea was based on his life in part. What would a movie series based on our lives be like? I don't know if it would be as exciting as Mission Impossible.
Oh, we got time. We can write some more storylines.
Oh, geez. Yeah, it'll just be a cavalcade of quesadillas here. But Mayhew is fascinating because he has never been officially linked to the assassination. And the other CIA folks, which I'm sure we'll get to, that were in the area, were for some reason, maybe operating, maybe just there, they have not been linked to the assassination. But Mayhew in particular has one heck of a CV. Or since we're talking about prison, he's got a hell of a jacket. He was an ex-FBI agent, and the CIA worked with him through his own private company, and they asked him to handle jobs that it wanted to keep at an arm's length. It wanted at a remove, you know?
Wait a second.
Yeah.
Mayhew is one of the other guys that Rob Reiner in his show Who Killed JFK talks about with the anti-Castro group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There really were cases where someone would come to Mayhew under shady circumstances and be like, this is your mission, should you choose to accept it. He lined up sex workers for foreign presidents, and he was the connection between the CIA and the mob in at least one of the plans to kill Castro. He definitely did this stuff. I want to shout out Chicago Mag. They have a great 2007 write-up on this by Brian Smith that talks about Mayhew's involvement.
Jeez, man.
So again, if you're looking for conspiracy, this guy is perfect casting because he actively did conspire to do some messed up stuff.
Yeah. Well, and he's not the only JM Wave associated guy that was there at the Ambassador Hotel on the day of the assassination. And we'll get into that. But this is nuts.
Yeah. His for more than a decade and a half, Mayhew and his company there, and you mentioned out of Washington, they were on a monthly retainer with the CIA, and CIA records would later confirm this. So we don't have a direct connection with Mayhew and Sirhan, but you can see why so many authors and researchers, they pause at this part. Oh, he also worked with Howard Hughes, and he would be like the fixer for the CIA and Howard Hughes, because Howard Hughes would fund CIA operations every so often.
Just for funsies?
Yeah, what do you get the company that has everything? You know?
Lots of tissue boxes.
There we go. Right. Oh, geez. So Pease says Mayhew, given his involvement in the murkier side of the trade, he would have had access to CIA experiments in hypnosis and mind control. He would have been read on to things like Midnight Climax, MK Ultra. Everybody check out Midnight Climax, which is hosted by our own Noel Brown.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a story.
And MK Ultra ran from 1953 to 73. So we're in the tail end of MK Ultra here.
So they had lessons learned, right? They at least knew what didn't work. And they also officially ended in 73. Sorry, yeah. I know that sounds snarky, but officially ended. Whatever. Take it as you will.
They got the internet. Yeah,
they got the internet. They don't need the LSD anymore. This author reasons that his knowledge of this and his previous involvement, his deep connections, would have allowed Mayhew and his crew to frame Sirhan as a patsy for the death of Robert Kennedy, while having another gunman, like a professional operator, fire the fatal shots.
Like another agent that we already mentioned once in this show. We'll keep going.
Yeah, right. And again, none of the book is really compelling. If you like this kind of stuff, it's a great read. Again, it's free online. The author also has to point out that none of this was ever proven in court. It's not been acknowledged by the U.S. government. Parts of the inconsistencies have been acknowledged. The book came out in 2019, and the author spent 25 years writing this, but is also, to be very clear, is not the first person raising these allegations. I don't know. Robert Mayhew, though, if you were going to cast someone for this conspiracy, he's great. He's one of the best picks, even though, I don't know.
But he wasn't there.
He was not physically there, right? Because he's a professional. Why would he be?
Can we go to the Joannides thing? The connection?
Yeah. Tell us about Joannides.
Okay, so a person that, again, Rob Reiner mentioned to us and then was mentioned extensively in his show Who Killed JFK, mentions this guy, George Joannides, who was, quote, chief of psychological warfare operations, and worked extensively with JM Wave, which was the CIA's Miami base for this whole secret war they had with Castro, right? With Cuba.
The producers of things like the Bay of Pigs.
Yes. And it has been known now that Joannides was at the Ambassador Hotel on the day of the assassination, despite Senator Kennedy or Robert Kennedy's distaste for CIA activities. His unwillingness to be protected by a lot of those official, you know, bodyguard or facilitating security systems, which are like, you know, if you're operating as a very high level person, it would be Secret Service, but Secret Service wasn't available to him at the time. It then would have probably been the FBI, and he had an ex FBI agent with him, but he didn't have any official acting FBI agents with him. And just knowing that this guy Joannides was there, along with a couple other people from that same company, that same crew, it calls into question. I don't know. It for me, it's like it's enough to need to be tracked down. Like, we need to know exactly what Joannides was doing there and where he was and all that other stuff. But we just don't have the full details.
Maybe there's a totally innocuous reason. You know what I mean? Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe there is. The point we're raising is that we don't know. And until we know what that reason is, until it can be proven to be innocuous, then you have to put it again in this weird Venn diagram of stuff that doesn't prove something, but it doesn't feel right. You know, there's something dissonant about it. And I don't know. They also, 2010, Sirhan's lawyers argue what was once treated like a wingnut idea. Sirhan's own lawyers in court say, look, the CIA hypnotized Sirhan. They made him an involuntary participant in the assassination. And the implication there is crazy. First off, because these are professional attorneys saying this in court. But secondly, because the implication is like, why him though? Why him, if there seems to be this preponderance of evidence in the weeks leading up to it, or indeed the years leading up to it, why him, why there, right? Did they identify someone struggling with mental issues who already had a track record of threats against RFK? Did they make those threats up? Did they plant that diary? I don't know.
I mean, it feels like the kind of, you know, candidate for a patsy or a fall guy that you see in other conspiracies as well. You know, whether it be pinning, you know, a murder for hire scheme on somebody who was sort of like a low hanging fruit kind of potential, like maybe low level drug runner or something, you know, who could fit the bill, but definitely didn't have the kind of motivation that maybe it would be made out to seem.
Because I think we maybe have talked about this in the past, but the route through the kitchen was not the planned way to go to exit right. from the podium where he was just speaking.
It was a last minute switch.
Yeah. And he was just told that by one of those athletes that was acting as a security team. I don't know. There's something about changing a walking route like last minute that for me compromises RFK's security in that moment, which means if you were aware that that was going to happen, or if you caused that route change to happen, you could have somebody planted there. And it, I don't know, there's something to that that feels so important to me.
There's also a counterpoint. There's another side to that coin, which is that it's not uncommon for those last minute switches to occur if you feel like your established route, like if you've already signaled that and messaged yeah. that out and you're worried about possible danger or shenanigans, then there are completely good and smart reasons to change the path at the last minute to keep them guessing, which is sort of why you don't see, I mean, you see it all the time with VIPs, not even necessarily heads of state, but you can see it with celebrities, right? Especially
yeah.
if they have ardent stalkery fans.
I think you're right. If they made it public, right, or if you made it even public to like staff at the hotel rather than just your internal security staff,
or someone found out, right?
Yeah.
It could be as simple as sliding 100 to someone at the front desk who happens to know the established route,
mm-hmm.
or you know, a place like the Ambassador Hotel also is home to VIPs,
yeah.
and so in these fancy hotels there are often. And if you go to the right hotel, folks, trust me, there are protocols in place and you can see those protocols, but they lose value with every new person that is aware of them.
Well, because they're unspoken and like you don't want to you don't want to overplay that hand, and it kind of dilutes the whole, you know, kind of secrecy of it all. And then I guess it requires a shift in protocol, right?
Yeah. And the thing we're quarreling with here is it's another great unknown. Where did they decide proactively to change the route on their own due to concerns, or were they pushed into that? Were they decision treed into walking through the kitchen and perhaps even thinking that was their own idea? All of these are possible. None of them are proven. And it's tantalizing, but it's torturous. I mean, look, none of this, which is bothersome, is, forgive us for saying so, smoking gun level evidence of anything. But
no.
There's a lot of unusual stuff already. We haven't even gotten to even weirder things yet.
No.
So these earlier authors, these researchers conclude that they seem to conclude that Sirhan did not himself kill Kennedy, or if he was the killer, that he was a lot more like a bullet than an assassin, right? Like the argument is he was made to do so. And they also say that the LAPD and the district attorney at the time were either crooked or incompetent, and maybe his defense lawyers were crooked or incompetent because they didn't challenge any of the physical evidence. And the physical evidence, Marbury Falls, not as ironclad as perhaps prosecution made it out to be. Is that fair to say? That's not like a hot take.
I think it is.
I think there's just weird. There's other weird stuff that was going on. Most of it came out after the trial.
Way after the trial. Yeah, because they wanted to shut this down.
Yep.
The U.S. at the time was already had some threats to the status quo, as the elite saw it, right? Widespread anti-war activism, civil rights movement, some secessionist movements like American Indian movement, all this kind of stuff. So it is in their interest to try to nip something in the bud, make the story look right, and move on as quickly as possible. The problem is the stuff that comes out afterwards, like the autopsy findings, right? That Kennedy must have been shot at close range, that he somehow got shot in the back of the head.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a gun nut to know that if you're shooting at someone from the front, it's really tough to hit them in the back of the head.
Yeah. Well, unless they turn their head, right? As unless shots they turn are their head being fired towards
back
them.
And to the left.
Yeah. Or it's a magic bullet, you know?
Well, no, but really, like, if you're in a situation and somebody in front of you or to your side is firing a gun at you, a 22, I'm going to say a little Ivor Johnson 22 revolver, but it's not. It would sound loud and it would be scary. You would probably turn away, right?
Well, that's
which
true.
Then a bullet could hit the back of your head. That's what was argued.
Or if somebody says, watch out, depending on where they're standing, you turn to look at them.
Yep.
Possible. Yet we also have to think about the distance is what we have to think about. Don't forget about the distance, because numerous eyewitnesses at the shooting, and we get it. Eyewitness reports are sticky and fallible, but numerous people confirmed multiple times over time that Sirhan was not close enough to fire at close range, and that he only got two shots out in Kennedy's direction before he is getting held and tackled to the ground. And as he's going down, he's just shooting wildly. He's spraying the rest of his bullets just out, go with God style.
And he's that's getting why, tackled and dealt with, right. Basically, right?
I can explain. Psh, 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 psh. And his pistol had 8 shots in it. We earlier said revolver, so that might think you had that might sound like it had 6 shots, right? No, this is a 22 caliber with 8 bullets in it, which will be important later. But I don't know. Do you guys right now, before we get into even weirder stuff, is it possible that Sirhan could have been manipulated by someone? Did he act on his own?
Well, yeah, but before we say that, Ben, there was somebody with a gun standing right behind RFK when this went down.
Yes, yeah, we'll get to him as well. Thane, right?
There's somebody that has a gun who is holding RFK's arm as he's walking through the kitchen. I don't know. Okay, whatever. Well, we'll so get wait, to wait, it. Wait.
Is this the theory of like Sirhan as distraction, as diversion, while somebody else does the deed?
That's the theory. That's the possibility. Idea.
Let's go into the drugs too on the way to that, because that's hypnosis and drugs. That's what prompted us to kind of re-explore this. We talked about a Manchurian candidate before over the years, right? It comes from a fiction novel, right? It's not like a super secret real Soviet program, but in this novel, a son of a political dynasty is brainwashed into becoming an assassin for the communists.
And this is not the same as, say, a sleeper agent, where I think a lot of people kind of misconstrue those concepts, where someone is deployed as like a basic, you know, civilian, and then, you know, whenever they're given a particular order or code word or whatever, they are activated, and then they carry out these instructions. This is much deeper. This is someone who is given a code word that all of a sudden switches their brain and makes them into a killing automaton of sorts, right?
Oh, yeah. And let's jump into that, guys. After another word from our sponsor, we'll be right back.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
We've returned. Yeah, that's an important differentiation, Noel. So if you have seen shows like The Americans, which is loosely based on real events, then you'll know that sleeper agents can be a real thing and exist as, to all intents and purposes, they exist as citizens of the country in which they're operating until they get their signal, their directives, etc. The idea of a Manchurian candidate argues that subconscious demands have been embedded into your psyche. You are a sleeper agent, but you are not aware you are right. A sleeper agent until you get that code word. You know, someone runs up to you, shows you a picture of a white elephant and says, Shamalama Ding Dong, and then you're like blowing up nukes.
And presumably the idea here in theory is that this is the deepest level of deniability for the handlers of this individual or for the people that are actually using them as a weapon. Because, I mean, even with the sleeper agent, you could get information out of that person. You could potentially figure out who they are answering to. Whereas with a Manchurian candidate, they don't know who they're answering to. You can't get anything out of them because it's not there for them to give.
And it might not. Yeah, that's a great point. It might not also go to the extreme of murder. The idea or this theory says that maybe you could have someone who is induced to give over sensitive information, mm-hmm. right? Just because they're, you know, a top level defense engineer. But there's also, as we game it through, there's something else interesting about the idea of deniability. So if there's a Manchurian candidate and it's operating purely on trigger words, right? Casting a spell, for lack of a better word, or like a visual series of visual cues or even olfactory stuff, you, as the person orchestrating this shenanigan, you don't have to present them the trigger yourself. You can just pay somebody who has no idea what's going on. You can pay them and say, look, I'll give you $50. You see that guy over there? Or, you know, in 2 days, there's going to be this guy over here. I want you to hold up this picture of what's an unusual animal?
A zebra.
I want you to hold up this picture of a zebra.
Sorry, I said, I don't know why I said
that. And then I want you to slowly turn it upside down and counterclockwise.
Plant somebody wearing a polka dot dress that walks by and says something or just, you know, makes a gesture that is the trigger.
Right, exactly. There are a million ways you could do it in this theory. There's never been a proven case of an actual Manchurian candidate in the real world. And that's because the problem goes to time frame, right? A lot of this goes to distance and time. So you can hypnotize someone, you can give them trance state suggestions, but hypnosis is not going to make people do stuff they would not ordinarily do.
Well, and it's not going to necessarily, again, we don't know there's a lot we don't know about how hypnosis works. And, you know, certain people are more susceptible to it than others, but it does kind of beg credulity to think that you could implant something that would just lay dormant indefinitely. Right. It's a little bit of hard to swallow for me.
Without continual maintenance.
Without continual maintenance.
Even if you're dosing someone with LSD, right, with an MK Ultra style experiment, if that person is in an LSD and, you know, affected state, and you're telling them things like RFK must die, you're repeating it over and over and over and over and over in that state while you're watching maybe film of the man's face and death and all this stuff, the conjured imaginations that appear in fictional stories, right? Even if you're doing that, how does the human being not recall any of those images or moments or just the very fine memories that could occur there?
Right. How can you embed it deeply enough into the psychic soil or the neurological soil?
Without having other byproducts that people would remember. You think you'd remember getting strapped to a chair with lid locks on and being forced to watch these films. Well, you know, I mean, we don't have the selectivity in how we can mess with people's memories to pick and choose. I don't think.
Well,
at least, not yet. We're getting there.
We stumbled on something just randomly in our last conversation. That's why we're doing this, right?
Yeah. So I like that we're pointing this out to fiction versus fact. So for another example of this is chloroform is often portrayed as this sort of super spy knockout
instant
thing.
Right.
Yeah. But the reality is you have to keep applying chloroform to keep someone knocked out. If you can
kill someone pretty easily.
And you can kill them pretty easily too. So if you take the rag off of their face, they're going to get up and they're going to be pissed at you. So be very, very, you know what, actually, I hope this is not a hot take. Your life is your own, but try to avoid situations where you feel like you have to chloroform people.
Yeah, or at the very least, get some sort of dart, you know, gun situation with like a much longer acting sedative.
There are better sedatives.
There was a recent story, you guys, this guy, there's an Elvis impersonator that was allegedly killed by someone via chloroform during a sexual encounter. You can read about it in the New York Post. Search for New York Elvis impersonator allegedly killed after being chloroformed during sexual encounter.
Are people using chloroform like poppers, like amyl nitrate or something?
People
or
get down, man.
They do. Yeah. Well, what you do in the bedroom is your own, but be careful. Don't go too heavy on the chloroform, guys.
Right. Consent and safety are keys. And there's, okay, so there's the other question. All right, we know the problem with the Manchurian candidate deployment in the real world is the time frame issue. But what if you could get around the time frame entirely? What if you just drugged the right person on the scene directly before you needed an action, and then you set them loose? Disturbingly enough, and this is what Matt was alluding to, we know with certitude that certain drugs can do that. Datura, aka Jims and Weed, is being deployed by criminals throughout South America to do this very thing as we record right now, as you hear this.
Scopolamine. It's the thing that, what was it, devil's breath? It's the thing
that's one of the names. Yeah.
It can get blown in your face, then you are immediately a compliant automaton, essentially, with no memory of what's happening. No memories are being formed.
It could be put on the tip of a cigarette. It doesn't take much.
Yeah. And you could literally make a suggestion. You blow the thing, you make a suggestion. It's like, shoot RFK, right? Somebody even hands you a pistol, or maybe you've already got a pistol. It's crazy that I think it may actually work.
It would. We know that it's worked in criminal cases. We know that the effects are immediate. It's tasteless. It's odorless. It's tough to find it if you're an investigator and you don't know what you're looking for. The results of being poisoned this way, we know that people will be tremendously compliant. They will go to their ATM and empty it out. They'll come to, you know, hours later with vague memories of helping criminals move the furniture from their houses. This is nasty stuff. Check out our Drugs as Weapons episode. And the lead toxicologist, or the lead world expert, I should say, on this, they agree that unlike hypnosis, exposure to these drugs can make you do stuff that you would not ordinarily do. So this is, if Sirhan was under the influence of something like that, he would have also been extremely compliant to suggestion throughout the interrogation process, so long as it happened shortly after ingestion. And this stuff can last like 24 hours or more.
Dude, and they said he was calm, right? But he wasn't of his own mind. He was like, I'm just imagining, I have not seen anyone under the effects of Datura or scopolamine or whatever, but I imagine someone who is just compliant and looks normal, maybe. But you might think that he would appear more intoxicated because he was drinking Tom Collins. He had like several Tom Collins drinks, Sirhan, while he was there at the Ambassador Hotel, at least according to the official story, which you could slip something in his drink while he's there at the bar.
You could slip something in his drink and have a brief conversation.
Oh, my God.
Timing right. I mean, there are a thousand ways to get to people with this stuff. Be safe. Keep an eye on your drinks.
And Ioannidis, again, the chief of psychological warfare operations, was hanging out at the hotel.
For possibly innocuous reasons.
Yeah.
That we have to say. Yeah, there's also this other thing. I mean, we do have to note the next part. The reason that the Czech secret police stopped using scopolamine, the reason that even the Nazis gave it up, is because it was terrible as a truth serum. It was terrible for suggestions and confessions, because people under the influence of that will confess to anything their interrogator suggests, even if it's impossible. Like, hey, do you have a tail? And they're like, oh yeah, I haven't checked recently, but I probably do. You know what I mean? Like, that, to that level of absurdity, because they'll also do anything that suggested, up to and including killing someone, if that is Sirhan had actual bullets in his gun and not blanks. Paul, can we get a record scratch?
I haven't heard this one.
So what if Sirhan was handed, like, going back to the distraction second gunman theory, what if he was handed a 22 caliber pistol, but it had blanks in it? And he was just functioning as a distraction. This is
a patsy, right? I mean, like a fall guy.
But wait, what? Because there are, I guess it depends on what evidence you believe. But in the ballistics, there were 22 rounds found, like, embedded into the walls, in like a door frame.
Wait, but from other people firing, right, at Sirhan? No, well,
the trajectory. The trajectory from some of them were Sirhan firing.
But he only had 8.
Yeah. And people would also, we'll get to it, people also claim they heard 13 gunshots later. But anyway, so in A Lie Too Big to Fail, Pease quotes eyewitnesses saying they saw, I'm not sure how I feel about this, shredded paper fluttering through the air as Sirhan was firing. And that was indicative of casings containing explosive charges, but no actual bullets. I don't know. Again, eyewitnesses are imperfect, and to remember shredded paper through the air, while that may be true, that might not have anything to do with the gunshots.
Pretty themselves. Circumstantial.
Right. Yeah, that's a good word for it. And then there were other people who were strapped at this time. There were armed men around behind Kennedy. One of the guys confirmed to be present and armed was a security guard named Thane Caesar, aka Gene Caesar. And he had previously done some work in Los Angeles with a guy named Robert Mayhew. It was not the kind of work that gives you a 401k.
And you may also see his name written as Eugene Thane Caesar. But he has been described as holding on to Robert Kennedy's arm, kind of leading him through the kitchen while he is armed. And then what did we talk about? The bullet? Back of the head situation?
Yeah. And he actually talks with Caesar spoke on record to researchers about this. And there was one interview he had with an author named Dan Moldia. And he said, quote, there are dozens of articles that have come out saying I carried a second gun that possibly could have been the person who shot Bobby Kennedy because, and this is Caesar speaking, because the bullet entered the back of his head. However, to be clear, Caesar has always denied any kind of implication. He passed away recently in the Philippines, where he retired. And there's nothing wrong with retiring abroad. I feel like I made that sound like such a breadcrumb, but there's nothing wrong with retiring abroad. People go to Costa Rica all the time, or whatever. But if we bring it all together, then the alternative narrative is something quite strange. A world in which Sirhan is also a victim, hypnotized or drugged, somehow compelled to appear to murder RFK, while behind the scenes, a shadowy cabal orchestrates the actual hit. Not very straightforward. It's a little mousetrappy, isn't it?
A little? Yeah. This is complicated as all heck. Unless there was, again, like we talked about in the past, when you've got that uncertainty thing, everybody tries to throw darts to be like, oh man, well, maybe that's it. Well, maybe that's it. Maybe this is the connection. Well, maybe that's the thing. And we'll do it forever until we get some certainty or some truth or somebody comes out and just says blatantly, hey, here's what's going on.
But do we have like a real reason why the government would want to collude to assassinate Robert Kennedy? Is it like yes. finishing the job of what they supposedly were doing when they colluded to assassinate John F. Kennedy? Are these connected? Like, what? Where's the threat? I guess I've never fully wrapped my head around that aspect of it.
The argument would be that factions of the government, most notably factions in domestic and foreign intelligence agencies like the CIA and the FBI, wanted to continue functioning without oversight and saw JFK in particular and RFK as well as threats to their operations. That's the idea that has not been officially recognized in any court, but it's something I think a slim majority of Americans still believe, at least here in the US, you know, where you find most of the Americans. Anyway, I don't know either, but I do have one question that isn't brought up enough in the literature here. It's this. Where was Bigfoot? There's no documented record of Bigfoot has no alibi for this.
Can he fire a gun?
Right.
With those thick fingers of his.
I'm having fun with this, but yeah, if you have proof of Bigfoot's whereabouts in 1968, tell us, because that'll also prove that Bigfoot is real. But it descends into this level of speculation. There is hard evidence of discrepancy. Sirhan's gun held only 8 bullets. Someone else was firing. Right. We just don't know the context.
It does feel at the same level of weirdness as what surrounded JFK's assassination. We know something fishy was going on there, especially with now we've got this whole the magic bullet theory kind of solved by that CIA agent who came out and said he found this other bullet lodged, you know, in the seat and didn't talk about it for years. That in and of itself is weird. But what a strange thing to have the literal, you know, relative of this highest profile assassination of a public figure, probably in the history of the world, with the most questions around it, leading to equal numbers of questions and having equal amounts of suspicious details.
The court had to answer to the court eventually had to respond to something they had originally dismissed as hogwash. They had to respond to the second shooter allegations. So Sirhan, after arrest, after trial, after conviction, makes multiple appeals, as many appeals as possible. And in one of the rejections of those appeals, a magistrate judge named Andrew J. Wistrich said, I don't love this, but the judge said, maybe there was a second shooter. It doesn't matter. Quote, even if the second shooter's bullet was the one that killed Senator Kennedy, Sirhan would still be liable for murder as an aider and abettor.
Yeah, convenient.
So it's like, remember that thing we said was a conspiracy? Well, even if it's true, whatever.
Move on, guys.
That's crazy.
But they also note the idea of a second gunman shooting Kennedy at close range with the same type of gun and same ammunition as Sirhan, also escaping a crowded room without notice in a room full of witnesses, say it lacks any evidentiary support. But I don't know. I feel like in that kind of chaos, it's kind of easy to do an Irish goodbye.
And like just get the heck out of there. Ghost.
Yeah.
No.
If you're not, you know, a prominent member of the thing, you know.
Well, and what of the idea of whether or not Sirhan was actively colluding with another shooter and was aware of his or her or their presence? That's another thing that's been dismissed as doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, he said, and he again says now, and for some time he's maintained that his memory of the events is fuzzy or non-existent, in a way that perhaps coincidentally jibes with the Toro poisoning, be quite honest with you. That doesn't, again, not proven. We don't know. But there are a lot of pieces here where you can already see, folks, how easy it is to string that red thread along from point to point. Sirhan recently lost his 17th parole hearing on March 1st, 2023. And he got really close this time, but it was shut down. And as we record today, it's April 19th, 2024. He is 80 years old. He is alive. Like most people in their 80s, he is not in the best of health. To all official accounts and conclusions, he is serving life for a successful, high-profile, politically motivated assassination.
Yeah. Well, let's just note here that one of the reasons, at least one of the large reasons, that his parole was denied for the 17th time back in March was because of the words of RFK's son, Christopher Kennedy. I just wanted to read just a couple of the things that he said, because I think it strikes at the heart of why at least the Kennedy family, parts of it, want him to stay in prison forever. But it also points to, I think, a larger statement about conspiracy theories and why they form. I really like these words. These are the words of Christopher Kennedy speaking against the being granted parole, Sirhan being granted parole. He says, quote, "This is a man who has never admitted to killing my father, never said he was sorry for having ended his life. He's refused truth, thereby forfeiting reconciliation. His repeated denials of his crimes have been devastating. His lack of remorse, soul crushing." And this is the important part here. "We don't want vengeance. We want justice. We want to offer forgiveness, but we need to see repentance. It's the oldest bargain in history. One side admits and the other side forgives. One side offers truth and the other side offers reconciliation." Basically saying that if Sirhan came forward and said, "Yes, I killed your father and I'm terribly sorry that I did that. I can't believe I did that," that kind of thing. Then I guess Christopher Kennedy and others in his family would forgive him and say, okay, this man needs paroled. But he hasn't done that. But if Sirhan wasn't actually the person that killed Robert Kennedy, then how do you go about, you know, offering that? It's just a sticky situation. And I do think that whole, it goes back to the statement, Ben, what do you always say about when there's murkiness?
In the absence of transparency, speculation thrives.
I think it goes right back to that, man.
Mm. And yeah, and you know, Richard is agreeing with, again, to be fair, the majority of the world, the majority of public opinion. But to others, a persistent group of questioners, Sirhan is one of the last pieces of a multi-decade conspiracy, living evidence of something, whomever they are, something they don't want you to know. And, you know, we're ending with a question here, too. I think we came with some great recommendations. If you want to read more, if you want to learn more about this specific instance, this period in time, there are some great podcasts out there. We can say it because we didn't make all of them, but there are some fantastic things out there. And we'd love to hear your thoughts, folks, especially if you were around when this occurred, if you happen to have any knowledge or involvement, or you have a different take, let us know. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist, on Facebook, where we have our Facebook group, Here's Where It Gets Crazy, on YouTube, where we roll out new video content every week. George Washington continues his time travel adventures in Hollywood. And in this week's installment, he discovers the deadly escalator. We also exist at that handle on X, FKA Twitter. On Instagram and TikTok, we're Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Hey, would you like to say something with your mouth? Call 1-833-STD-WYTK. That's our voicemail system. When you call in, give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. You've got 3 minutes. Again, say whatever you'd like. If you've got more to say than can fit in that voicemail message, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late-night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.